The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionix, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
Hello and a very happy new year to you from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Dan, promising you another year of weekly podcasts where you'll meet the movers and shakers, the groovers and deal makers, decision makers and programme makers from the radio industry in Britain and around the world. For example, how's this from BBC Radio's Head of Technology?
If you want the very best quality, listen over the internet.
Interesting stuff. More from Rupert Brun later. Also in this first edition of 2015, we'll catch up with Larry Gifford from the Radio Stuff to hear about recent developments in US radio. We'll have news from Roy Martin and, of course, David Lloyd's Radio Moments. But first, I don't know about you, but I've been left confused by the announcement that Absolute Radio has abandoned stereo on national DAB and started transmitting in mono. This leaves, as far as I can see, Classic FM as the only national commercial radio station on DAB in stereo. Now, wasn't digital radio meant to offer us better quality radio? Is it better business to have more poor quality stations than fewer good quality ones? Or don't listeners care? What, in fact, is the difference between station signals when it comes down to the arcane world of kilobits per second? Well, for help with all this, I turned to Rupert Brun, Head of Technology at BBC Radio. And to put the issue in perspective, I asked him which radio station in the UK has the biggest bandwidth and how low can you go?
OK, well, Radio 3 on DAB most of the time has 192 kilobits a second. That's the biggest I know. We sometimes drop that to 160, but normally it's at 192, and that's not bad. That's working at the high end of the range that the technology was designed to work at. At the low end, for a speech station that's mono, 64 kilobits a second is quite common.
OK, so let's talk about the BBC networks. Radio 3 is the biggest. That means, in a sense, it's got the biggest pipe carrying data. And we understand that from our own laptops or our own broadband, don't we? The bigger the pipe is, the faster it is, the more efficient it'll be. So Radio 3 is the biggest. How far do you have to dip from that 192 kilobits a second before you as a listener would notice?
It depends on the content. So if you're listening to classical music, as soon as you come down from 192, if you are listening on good equipment in a quiet environment and you're an experienced listener, you will notice a difference. If it's mono speech radio, 192 would be a waste because you could come down a long way below that, probably to 80 kilobits a second, before there was an important difference. If you could just switch between them and do a direct comparison between the two, yes, you would detect a difference on even mono speech going from 192 to 128. But would it be an difference that would detract from your listening experience? Probably not.
Just to go off to a little tangent, if I switched between Radio 3 DAB 192 and Radio 3 on FM, which of those would sound the better to me if my equipment was pretty good?
Again, it depends on what Radio 3 is broadcasting at the time, and it depends on you as a listener.
Well, I'm going to give you an example then. I'm going to say, what about the Festival of Carols from King's College on Christmas Eve?
Okay, so Radio 3 on DAB has more dynamic range because you don't get the background hiss, so we can do quieter, quiet things. We don't put dynamic range compression on it at present, so you get a wider dynamic range on DAB, and you get a wider range of frequencies. DAB can go higher than 15 kilohertz, and FM can only go up to 15 kilohertz. On the other hand, DAB does introduce coding artifacts. Even at 192 kilobits a second, it will do things to the signal that some people find more objectionable than others. So some people don't like the hiss on FM, and they don't like the loss of dynamic range, and they don't like the fact that you don't get the really high frequencies. Others are more susceptible to the coding artifacts. So in a way, it's quite good that we've got both and you can have a choice. If you want the very best quality, listen over the internet for the BBC services.
Because, oh, how interesting, really?
Well, because on the internet, we can use the very latest codecs. If we want to use more modern ways of coding the signal on radio, we've got to get some sort of international agreement to that. And then we and other broadcasters have to agree to use it. And people have to manufacture radios to incorporate that stuff. And then people have to buy them. If we decide to use a more modern codec on the internet, then you open the web browser in your computer and it says, oh, I need the latest codec, and it downloads it and you've got it. So we can always use the latest technology on the internet, and we can provide far higher sound quality over the web these days than we can on any broadcast platform.
That's a real jaw-dropping moment, Rupert. Thank you for that. Does that mean I should go home and listen to a programme tonight on Radio 2 on the internet because it'll be better than it is off the radio?
Yes.
Fantastic. That's my scoop. OK, let's just go back to DAB then. So, Absolute Radio used to be in stereo and now it's in mono. That's because the number of kilobits per second has been reduced to allow for other stations to come on. What's the listener going to notice?
If, like most DAB listeners, they're listening on a mono radio in their kitchen, they're probably not going to notice a great deal of difference at all. I think where mono is a concern is in the car, because when you're in a car, you're sitting very close to one speaker, you're sitting in an environment where there are speakers all around you, and the difference between stereo and mono is very, very noticeable. And with more and more cars coming with DAB radios as standard these days, I think that's an area where if I were broadcasting in mono, I'd be worried.
So if you're in a car and you switch between, let's say, BBC Six Music and Absolute, and they're playing the same record, you really would notice that difference.
You really would notice, because a lot of the differences that we're talking about are things that trained people or experienced listeners in good environments will hear. They're things for the golden ears to worry about, but everybody's going to notice the difference between stereo and mono when they're sitting in a car.
Because I suppose, just to push back slightly, we all know, don't we, that lots of people listen to the radio and it's not properly tuned in. They watch the television off tiny screens and the colour isn't right. And, you know, are consumers as bothered about this stuff as we are?
No. And it's quite right that we worry more about it than they do. But we do have to accept that what the listener cares about is all that matters in the end. And people listen to audio that's been very heavily compressed. All the dynamic range has gone out of it. Lots of records are produced that way these days. And they are happy with it. However, what we do know is that although listeners will listen to something quite happily, if you then give them something a lot better, they will say, yeah, okay, that's a bit better, but I'm not really all that bothered. But if you let them have the better thing for a few weeks and then you take it away, then they really notice that the life has gone out of the music. So I think all the time there are some services that are providing good quality audio and people listen to those. When they then go to something that's not as good, they will notice the difference.
Okay, now let's just go back to DAB. It is said that DAB, as it's currently constituted in the UK, is MP2 quality. And we're, of course, all very familiar through our smartphones and so on with MP3. What's the difference between those two?
MP3 is a more recent technology. It codes the audio more efficiently. So for a given bandwidth, a given number of kilobits a second, you get better quality out of MP3. But MP3 is itself now old, and there are far more efficient codecs available now. The AAC family of codecs are far more efficient again than MP3. So if we could use AAC codecs, we could fit twice as many radio stations into our DAB multiplex and get the same quality, or we could keep the number we've already got and deliver twice as good a quality.
And is that why DAB Plus would be a good thing, in just in terms of more stations?
It's why DAB Plus would be a good thing if we were starting today. Because we could put twice as many stations in, or we could have them in far better quality. But the real problem there is that DAB has been hugely successful in the UK, and now accounts for a quarter of the listening, and 26 million adults in the UK have access to a DAB radio, and a very large number of those DAB radios wouldn't support the latest codecs if we started to use them. So there's a difficult political and financial issue to overcome there. Technically, it's quite straightforward. If it were decided that we needed to broadcast using the DAB Plus technology, then later this year I could do it. But a lot of people would be very unhappy because instead of getting a better service, they'd get none at all.
Let me ask you a couple of nerdy questions from a sort of producer's background. Here I am recording this interview with you on a flash mic. this will be a .wav file when I get it home. I'll stick it into Adobe Audition. I'll edit the podcast as a WAV, and then I'll upload it as an MP3. What's the difference between those two for the listener?
For the listener, I mean, WAV files are very big. So you probably wouldn't want, as a listener, to have to download those and put them on your mobile phone. It would take a long time to download them and your mobile phone would fill up very quickly. So MP3s are fine. Let's not knock them. They're perfectly good enough for most things most of the time. So I think you don't have to worry about that. It's great.
And should I worry as a producer about whether I'm using 44.1 or 48K? What's the difference between those two?
That's the number of thousands of samples a second that the audio records. CDs use 44.1, and because a lot of the broadcasting industry's content came from CD, a lot of the broadcasting industry worked at 44.1. 48 is the professional standard, and the reason that that's widely adopted is for tedious reasons to do with television.
Typical.
Television worry about getting a whole number of samples of sound in one picture. And if you use 44.1, you don't get a whole number of samples of sound to go with one frame of the picture. So they use 48, and the BBC has moved radio to 48 because we've redeveloped Broadcasting House and we've now got television and radio in the same building. And running 44.1 and 48 in the same building at the same time is error prone. If we broadcast a programme at the wrong sample rate, it comes out at the wrong pitch. It's only slightly the wrong pitch for most people, particularly with speech programming. Probably most people wouldn't notice. But the fact that the programme would last 10% longer or shorter than it should have done is going to cause problems.
So does that mean that
to record it in the format that the person who's going to broadcast it is going to broadcast
right,
it?
Right, so I was going to ask you that. So if a programme was made at 44.1 5 years ago and it's sitting in the archives, yeah, and you now pull it out and want to repeat it, have you got to change it into a 48 yeah file?
Yes, we have to convert them, and we have very carefully designed systems to ensure that when we move things from 44.1 to 48, if they need to be converted, they are. And we did a huge number of listening tests to find a converter that was good enough and that I am happy with, even for the most critical content. And it took a long, long time for us to find a converter that passed all the tests, and we were happy to use it, but we've done it. So we don't have to worry about it, provided that people use the systems in the way we've designed them to be used. Anything that needs to get converted will be converted. But having said that, obviously it's still best to make it in the format that is required. So if you're delivering to the BBC, make it in 48 kilohertz these days.
And how many bits? Because you can do 48, 16 or 32.
Or 24 or... Yeah. Well, we generally only work to 16 for broadcasting. If you supply more than that, if you supply 24, that's fine. Again, the really important thing to think about is converting. So if you are using some high-end digital audio word station that works to a high number of bits, the important thing is that when it gets converted down to 16 for broadcasting, it's done nicely. It's done using what's called dithering, which does a nice job of converting it down, rather than just chopping off the bits that you don't want, which is called truncation and which doesn't sound very nice.
Okay, so when I'm making a programme for the BBC, should I set my editing programme, whether it's Audition or whatever it is, should I set it to be at 48, 16-bit? Is that the best thing for me to do?
I'd definitely set it at 48. I'd set it at a higher number of bits. I'd set it at whatever, 24 is a good number to work at, because whilst you're working on the audio, you want all the precision you can get. But when you deliver the finished file, we'll only use 16-bit for broadcast.
So if I make a programme that has some MP3 in it, mm-hmm, which between you and me, I've always been told I'm not to do, yeah, but I have regularly done, mm, and no one complains, what's happening there? Is it actually just a bit nerdy and a bit for people like you to worry about and the listener doesn't care? Or is there a genuine reason why I shouldn't use a bit of MP3?
Again, it depends. So if you use a bit of MP3 in a program that's going to be broadcast at a reasonably high bit rate, that's absolutely fine. If you make a program with a bit of MP3 and it's going to be played down an ISDN line from some regional centre, so it gets coded again in the ISDN, and it's then going to go out on a radio service that's broadcast using MP2 at 64 kilobits a second, the fact that it's all had all that coding done with different coding algorithms will mean that what comes out the end might not sound very nice. So even though at the start the MP3 sounded nice, by the time it's been through the ISDN and then the MP2 for DAB, it can start to be pretty unpleasant. So it's a good idea, particularly if you don't know what the future life of your audio is going to be, to try and avoid lossy codecs like MP3 or the ISDN codecs or anything like that in the production process.
So if, for instance, we nick something off YouTube or a bit of archive off something on the internet and it's an MP3 file, should we code that into WAV as soon as we can, as at the point where we make that recording?
Yes, and if you get the opportunity to provide some documentation with your program, it's probably worth making a note to say this part has been converted from MP3, so that if on broadcast there are some problems on some platforms, at least we've got a fighting chance of knowing why. The other problem, of course, is that if people take things off an MP3 copy of something that's been broadcast and then it goes back into the archive, it can end up going round and round and degrading a little bit each time. So even though you're absolutely right, for one use of an MP3 in a program, probably nobody's going to notice. It might cause problems in the future, or it might cause problems further downstream if it's distributed on a lossy platform.
Okay, so let's just go back to the whole business of bandwidth and transmission now. How many times can we do this? How many times can we chop the bandwidth of stations before there's going to be listener pushback?
It depends on the listeners. Radio 3's audience complain vociferously when I drop them from, some of Radio 3's audience complain vociferously if we have to drop them from 192 to 160, which we do from time to time.
Is that when you do a pop-up station like Eurovision?
It's when we do pop-up stations or when we're doing sports coverage sometimes. It's when we've got a lot of other things going on. And there can be a number of reasons why we do that. For example, Radio 4 Longwave does Yesterday in Parliament, that sort of thing, all of which requires extra bandwidth, and we have to take a bit away from different places. And certainly when we're doing pop-up stations, we have to stop doing some of the data services like the electronic programme guide. So we do try to protect the quality of the audio by looking for other places to get the bandwidth from. How often you can do it? I think for music services, people do notice, everybody notices the difference once you go below 80 kilobits. Mm-hmm. 80k is kind of okay in mono. For music, it's not great, and it is mono. But I don't think really you can go far below that without the audience complaining and moving away. And there have been stations in the UK, not BBC ones, who have dropped their bit rate and then put them back up again. So they wouldn't have done that just for the fun of it. There must have been commercial imperatives, which I guess would have been down to listeners. So I think, 80 kilobits is kind of the bottom line for music. You can go below that, and we occasionally do for pop-up services where we've got no choice. It's the only way we can provide it, but it doesn't sound as good as 80 and above.
Final question then, just a little bit of futurology. What's happening in the next 5 or 10 years? People say, well, FM is going to die eventually because the transmitters will fall down and just rust away. Is that going to happen? Is DAB Plus likely to happen? From your perspective, I know you're not speaking on behalf of the BBC, but just as a guy who's interested in this stuff, where do you think we're going to be in a decade?
I hope DAB Plus happens. I know it will be difficult, but the longer we leave it, the harder it will be in some ways. So I hope DAB Plus happens. A lot of people suggest that we won't be worrying about transmission because we'll all be getting everything out of our mobile phones. Technically, that is doable, but not at a price the broadcast industry, the telephone companies, or the consumer can afford. That's the real sticking point there, is that if we were to have a mobile phone network that was capable of delivering all of our broadcast content to all of our broadcast listeners, none of us could afford it. technically perfectly doable. So I think we'll still be using broadcasting, and I hope it will be DAB Plus because it's the best horse in town, really. It's not the only one.
And will it work under the railway bridge in Bulldog?
Well, DAB can be made to work in tunnels. And it's interesting that in Switzerland, for example, they're going for a huge rollout of DAB. And they have a lot of long road tunnels, and they're planning to put DAB through the tunnels. And doing something in that kind of volume is bound to drive down the price of providing that kind of solution. Whether it'll be done for your particular railway bridge, I doubt, to be honest.
Rupert, thank you ever so much. You've been very candid and very interesting. I know that when I say to people, oh, there's a really interesting interview on the pod this week, it's Rupert Brun talking about kilobits per second. They'll all phase over. But that was really interesting, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Trevor.
Let's have some news now. Here's Roy.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
And the first update from Radio Today this year. Ofcom wants to hear from you. The regulator is holding a series of meetings throughout the year for feedback on its draft annual plan, which outlines Ofcom's work programme and priorities for the coming financial year. Magic has launched on Digital One and introduced part one of its new sound from Wise Butter, including, you guessed it, new jingles. It's also working with Wise Butter and USB Content to provide specialist programming for the network. And the nominees are out for the Hospital Radio Awards 2015. Check out all the details at radiotoday.co.uk. That's the very latest. I'm Roy Martin.
Thank you, Roy. After these words, we'll go stateside and check in with Larry Gifford from the Radio Stuff.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, NewsBoss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Well, as befits the turn of the year, we should think about reviewing the year of radio 2014. Who better to do that with than our old friend Sir Larry Gifford from the Radio Stuff? See what I did there?
I've been knighted.
You've been knighted for services to radio and podcasting. Larry, how are you doing?
I am terrific, Trevor. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a great pleasure. Now, I asked you to pick five stories from your neck of the woods that you think made 2014 what it was. So off you go.
All right. So the first one I wanted to say is it's kind of a unique format that's been created here in the States. It's just cropping up here towards the end of the year, but it's spreading like wildfire, and it's classic hip hop. So they talk about, you know, what's old is new again. Well, so what's old is new again in hip hop. So Tupac and LL Cool J and Notorious B.I.G., all these rap stars from the 80s and 90s that we've kind of forgotten about, now they've got their own format, just like classic rock, but it's classic hip-hop. And I think in the last month, has been on 10 new radio stations in the U.S., and it's really catching storm. And I find that really comforting to see that new formats continue to be created.
Indeed so. And do they have DJs from the old days, or do they have younger people presenting them?
Well, each station's doing it a little bit differently, but yeah, I mean, it's just like classic rock. You've got the guys that were DJs when these songs were new sitting in the chair again and spinning the records or spinning the CDs, or I guess they're now MP3s now, but hopefully they do some of the old school records and they can do live scratching on the air. I mean, there's a lot of things they could do with it.
To use Mark Story's old joke, it's from hip-hop to hip-op.
The next story I want to talk about is the continuing evolution of the digital dash.
Ah, the connected car.
Yeah, I mean, it's for whatever reason, it continues to be a hot story here. And I think half of the people on radio are scared stiff, and the other half are leading the charge and holding conferences about it and talking about it and putting videos online like, this is what a connected car looks like. I mean, the problem is most people on radio can't afford a new car. Mm-hmm. So they've never experienced the digital dash, but they know that that's how they need to get their content to people. And then consumers don't know how to find the radio stations, or the satellite's been turned off, or the HD radio's been turned off. I mean, there's all sorts of things that we need to do to educate people on how to use the digital dash, not just in the industry, but the consumer as well.
Yes, for my Radio 5 Live review of the radio year, we put a guy called Michael Hill from the UK Radio Player in a Tesla supercar. This is a £50,000 electric car, and you know, it does 0-60 in 4-point-something seconds.
Wow.
And it has a screen on the front of it where you'd expect the dashboard and its buttons to be, that's the size of about 3 iPads.
Wow.
And it takes forever to find the radio. You know, you've got to press a button that says media, and then you've got to find an icon that says radio, and then you've got to choose, do you want FM or AM or DAB or what the hell you want. Of course, what you really want it to do is just say, give me 6 Music or give me Capital Radio. But it's even more complicated than having it on your smartphone.
Oh, yeah. And well, I mean, you think about how difficult it is to find a channel on, like, satellite television. I mean, it's becoming the same thing for radio.
And we need to fight that, don't we? Because
we really do.
We're in charge in the car. That's what we do.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. So story number 3, Larry.
This is a sad story. The great Casey Kasem, the host, the longtime host of America's Top 40, it was a strange year for him. First, he was kidnapped by his wife and held captive away from his kids. And then he died, and people weren't sure if he was dead or not. And then they couldn't find the body. And then there was a battle over his body. And the poor guy, I don't even know if he's buried yet. I mean, he was supposedly the judge was making a decision to let him be buried in Sweden, I think. But, I mean, it is such a strange, bizarre ending to such a fabulous radio career.
Oh, this is a guy who defined the American chart show, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was the biggest name in American radio for generations.
Generations. And you know, he invented the long distance dedication. People grew up imitating him. I mean, that's who you listen to on Saturday morning. I'm Casey Kasem. You know, I mean, everybody has their impersonation. Everybody is, he's kind of, anybody in radio is like, it's one of those figures you're like, if I could ever meet him. And I actually did meet him. I worked alongside of with him at Premier Radio in Los Angeles for about 2 years. And every Thursday he'd come into the studio across the hall from ours. And he was just a little guy, always pleasant, big smile. He looks unassuming. He opens his voice and that booming voice comes out. You're like, no mistaking, that's Casey Kasem.
Yes, it's a shocking story, that, isn't it? And I suppose you know, what's been going on here with all these, you know, DJs who've been sent to prison or charged with various things. And it's a reminder of just, you know, what a tawdry world it can be. You know, there was Casey Kasem, who was such a big star, you know, and died rather as sort of old boxers do.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Very sad, very sad. Anyway, let's cheer ourselves up, if we may, with radio story number 4 from Mr. Larry Giffords. I've demoted you again.
Mister? Yeah. What happened to my sir? All right. Clear Channel rebranded the company as iHeartMedia to correspond with iHeartRadio, their digital platform, and really to shed their reputation. Clear Channel didn't have the best of reputations in radio. They've accumulated a ton of debt and a ton of radio stations over the course of years. And for a while, they were the really big bully on the street. They own Premier Radio and hundreds of radio stations across the country. Cumulus Radio has now come on board as almost taking that black hat role that Clear Channel had. But Clear Channel really wanted to refresh its image. So, and think of it forward thinking. You know, think Clear Channel, you think of the old radio stations, the booming radio stations across the country that were initially invented for emergencies and whatnot, where they go to 40 states. You know, you have that Clear Channel signal. And that's how it was named. And now they're iHeartMedia, which is much more forward thinking. It's digital. It's not even necessarily radio, but it's multi-platform. And so they've sort of put this new can of paint over the company, but they're still trying to shed $22 billion in debt.
Billion?
Billion with a B.
That's a lot of millions, isn't it?
That's a lot of millions. And so they just spun off. They're selling like 400 of their radio towers. They are, you know, reducing their workforce. And they're going through a lot of hard times right now trying to find that money. And it's going to be interesting to see. You know, there are rumors that they could be headed to bankruptcy in 2015. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that. But Clear Channel really, with its rebranding, has put itself in a different light in the media landscape.
How odd if you went back 20 years and you said, well, of course, in 2014, Clear Channel will be in big trouble. But NPR, that'll be doing really well. So what's item five?
Well, I mean, NPR is, you know, sort of the golden story of the year, right? I mean, they have had a terrific year. And I think this is probably the story of the year for U.S. radio. And it's not just one thing. I mean, from the digital aspect, their website and their app, they've totally redesigned that, and it's super cool. They have the Serial podcast, I mean, at least the association with public radio and This American Life, and Serial's all part of that mystique of public radio. The great Carl Castle, the longtime newscaster and the announcer on some of their weekend shows, retired this year, and so there was a big tribute to him. And then the death of Car Talk's Tom Moyazzi. I mean, this Car Talk was one of the biggest shows.
It was a brilliant show as well, wasn't it? And so simple. You take two old brothers who are running a dodgy car mechanic business and just get them to talk to each other and to occasional listeners. It was unmissable, wasn't it?
Well, and what was funny about it is, you know, the way this show started, he was invited to a public radio station, Tom was, to join a panel of other mechanics, and he was the only one that showed up. So they liked him so much they invited him back next week, and he brought his brother, and the rest is history.
on the whole, is NPR now something that the radio industry takes a little bit more seriously than it used to?
Oh, absolutely. When I first started as a programmer, NPR was kind of like the Spanish language stations in the market. You just sort of erased them from the ranker. Because, we were not really competing with them because they're public radio. They raise funds from their audience, so we don't need to include them in our ranker position. And now NPR's on the streets selling sponsorships for big dollars, and they, you know, they lost a lot of their government funding, so they've got to hit the pavement just like the commercial radio stations, and they're winning. They've got FM signals. They've got great Cume and TSL, Time Spent Listening, and they are, I mean, they're a force to be reckoned with in a lot of big cities like Seattle and San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York. And I mean, and so these news talk radio stations that are still on the AM dial, or these, you know, even some of them on the FM dial, they're having a hard time competing with it because it's so established. I mean, you think about those shows on NPR have been around for 30, 40 years.
And here's the thing, they've reached this position by being creative and by investing. And so much of commercial radio has gone the other way, and it's ended up, as you just said, with, you know, Clear Channel having $22 billion worth of debt. You know, there's a lesson to be learned there somewhere, isn't there, Larry?
Well, it is. And what they've done is they've created brand loyalty. People love to carry around their NPR tote bags and their NPR coffee mugs that they've made, you know, $100 or $200 or $500 in donation for. I mean, it's developing a relationship with your audience. And they treat their audience with respect, and they allow their audience to be members. It's a club. It's not just a radio station. It's
a community, isn't it? To use the modern word. It's a social network.
It really is. And they've continued to leverage that to great success.
Do you think that's going to be a continuing story into 2015?
I do, and I think what you'll see is these commercial radio stations trying to emulate many of the styles and sort of the ideas that NPR has put forth. Like, I can see the presentation style of a Serial podcast becoming a presentation style on an FM news talk station.
Well, I hope so. And I hope also that they think that it's worth investing in journalism and in finding stories to tell, you know, because you can only get by so far with, you know, here's a microphone and here's 4 hours of airtime fill it. You know, and we all know stations like that. And there's not much of a future in that, is there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can't bang your fist on the table for 4 hours. I mean, no. It's just exhausting.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Larry Gifford from the Radio Stuff. An appointment to listen on your podcatcher. Let's have some radio moments now, shall we? From David Lloyd.
Radio Moments. David Lloyd.
The first days of the new year not surprisingly give rise to a host of anniversaries.
Now on BBC Radio 4. It's the Archers. Well, it will be once I've actually selected it. Hang on just 1 minute.
Yes, this week, 64 years ago, the Archers began regular weekday editions after its trial the year before.
Hey, good job we got that heavy ploughing done.
Yeah, that Lakey Hill job of mine's going to cost a bit more though, at that rate.
Mm, yes. How's the new bank rate of 4% going to affect that overdraft, Dan?
I don't know. Better see the bank manager in the morning about that.
Well, milk, meat and flour are all going up in price. I wonder if the farmers are going to get anything out of that increase.
Yeah, I don't know.
Happy anniversary to the Archers. Brand changes often happen at the year end, and so it was that the Galaxy stations waved farewell this week 4 years ago.
Galaxy was your cooler older brother or sister, your stupid best mate who gets a little bit too leery on a night out. It was a safe haven away from bad news and real life, a link to the dance floor, plugging you straight into the best festivals and club nights, whether you're too old, too young or too skint to be there yourself. And above all else, it was a little bit different, stood out from the crowd, never afraid to push the boundaries and buttons and do something a little bit out there.
The end of Galaxy 105 in Yorkshire this week in 2011, ready for its capital future. Galaxy and Global's hit music stations formed a new 9-station capital network.
It's just gone 10 o'clock, Monday the 3rd of January 2011. Capital is here and we are Twiggy and Emma.
Now let's just explain, Twiggy and Emma, I'm Twiggy, I am the bloke. I know it sounds a little bit strange, a little bit odd, but I am definitely a bloke.
A new show on Radio 2 this week, 12 years ago.
Thank you, Ken. You can't do another half hour, can you, because we're not quite ready.
If the money's right.
See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Good afternoon and the warmest of welcomes to the Jeremy Vine Show. Very nice to be with you. Today we discuss guns among young black men. Will a change in the law change... The Home Secretary David Blunkett joins us. Welcome to you.
Well, welcome to you as well, and good luck with the new programme. It's a hard act to follow. You're experienced enough to be able to do it, and I hope I can do justice to being the first.
Is it really 12 years since Jeremy Vine took over from Jimmy Young?
Bye for now.
11 years ago this week, a new voice on Radio 1 Breakfast.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1.
Wake up one morning, have a sleep.
You too, a beautiful day from Radio 1. Morning, Britain. I am Chris Moyles, the saviour. Hello. First of all, look at the text messages to get all the compliments and, you know, good morning wishes and everything. Carla's already...
The ever-modest Chris Moyles this week in 2004. Radio 1 and 2 now have their own FM frequencies, but years ago they used to share some programmes and also share some limited access to stereo FM. So, this week, 42 years ago, the top 20 was simulcast for the first time, so you could hear it in stereo.
6 o'clock on Radios 1 and 2, my name's Tom Brown. This is the top 20, as compiled for the BBC by the British Market Research Bureau.
And staying with the charts, this week, last year, the first big top 40 with Marvin Humes.
Is the Vodafone Big Top 40.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Marvin Humes and Kat Shube. We are live across the UK on the Vodafone Big Top 40 and ready to count down the most...
This week, 88 years ago, staff at the BBC worked late, I suspect, to change the headed notepaper. The British Broadcasting Corporation came into being, with the business transferring from the British Broadcasting Company. And the following year, on the 2nd of January 1928, the first daily service was broadcast. It came from Savoy Hill on 5XX. 7,000 letters of appreciation were received.
The time on Radio 1 is 5 o'clock, and here is Anne Nightingale, as promised, to introduce... Let me finish.
Sorry, Terry.
Look, who's the senior man around here?
You are.
Not so senior, though. What's new?
Terry Bogan.
The voice of a young Terry Wogan, who returned to host Breakfast on Radio 2 22 years ago. Another great breakfast host began his tenure this week 11 years ago, and he's still there.
I would want to bring, and I know I'm in a minority, I'd love to see something like a Fox News approach to news in this country. I think it's great. If people didn't want it, they won't watch it, they won't listen to it, the bloody thing will die and it'll all be over.
Nick Ferrari, who began Waking Up London this week in 2004. 75 years ago this week, the BBC started bringing some cheer to our armed forces. A special entertainment station was launched. It was called simply For the Forces at the outset, later the Forces Programme, and eventually the General Forces Programme.
This is the General Forces Programme.
The station broadcast on 877 kHz medium wave and brought us a host of lively programmes.
Music While You Work was played this morning by Jimmy Leach and his organolians.
Ladies and gentlemen, Workers' Playtime.
Workers' Playtime, it's your labour.
After the war, the entertainment fair on the Forces programme was to evolve into the Light programme and eventually to Radio 2. So with the death of wartime newsreader Alvar Liddell 34 years ago...
Here is the midnight news, and this is Alvar Liddell reading it.
Open University programme starting on Radio 4 44 years ago... The first Mark Forrest networked BBC Local Radio evening show 2 years ago.
Going to enjoy some of the best stories from across BBC Local Radio.
And Peter Donaldson reading his final Radio 4 bulletin this week last year.
And two men have been arrested in connection with a bomb planted on a police officer's car in East Belfast. BBC News.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
David Lloyd ending this week's Radio Today programme. Thanks also to Larry Gifford and Rupert Brunn. This has been a TDC production. And next week, as the podcast bandwagon gathers speed, we'll reflect on Radiotopia, the phenomenal Kickstarter campaign which has raised £500,000. We'll have a special report from one of its beneficiaries, Helen Zaltzman. See you then.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.